please help me to welcome our speaker tonight, Anthony B. from the Underground Group in Philly.
Wow, that was a pretty warm welcome. My name is Anthony. I'm an alcoholic. Sorry, I had to recognize that because I think maybe we might not all fit in this pavilion, how big my head is getting for that. Welcome. Sorry. I have a sobriety date. It is September 1st, 2004. I do have a home group. I have a sponsor who is aware that he is sponsoring me. I think that's really important, especially at this time in my life, and I'll get into that. I did some praying before I came up here, and I prayed to God, please, you know, help me come up with the truth about me within my heart and my experience. And also, if your job for me tonight is to make a complete ass out of myself, so be it. So if I screw up, please blame God. I believe it is my job tonight in a general way to share what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I love these podium meetings, you know, because anywhere I go, I stand up. And one, it's always been tradition in my sponsorship family to stand up so everyone can see you and hear you pretty clearly. And I also believe that, you know, it's definitely worth standing up for because it is an absolute honor to have the opportunity to transmit anything that's in my heart to someone else who may be suffering. And before I get into that in this general way, there's some things I kind of want to just get out there that I think is extremely important, especially considering what has been going on and what's been transpiring in my life. You know, they say the new person is the most important person in the room. And then you hear people say, hey, you know, maybe not that person is within their first 30 days. Maybe the person is within their last 30 days. And I think that maybe we need to quit about all the trivial stuff and recognize what our program is about. And there is a circle and it has a triangle and it's supposed to represent unity, service, and recovery, you know, which I think, you know, the most important part, and I think what's kind of like in the center of that, and what should be in the center of that triangle, is love. And I don't think it's talked about enough in AA, you know? Like, kind of put our differences aside for a second and realize that we're all miracles here. Our hearts are beating. We have experience with how it doesn't work, you know? That there might be people in this room that haven't been down the road that we've been down. And we might be able to say, hold on a second, man, you don't have to go that way. You know what I mean? Even just that doesn't have to be, you know, this poetic speech, you know, all this knowledge and experience. Love. One heart to another. You know, it produces miracles. There's magic that happens when we take the time to share our experience with another person, you know. It's amazing. I just heard a guy, I've been helping this kid, and he's never had experience with the steps. And he was in his own way, and somehow he got forced to go to this meeting. And he said he met a kid with 24 hours or less. And he went outside, and he told them just how, like, you know, we both met. And how things are starting to change for him. And he calls me and he says, dude, I didn't even try to sponsor. He's like, by the end of the conversation, like, I had a tear in my eye and goosebumps. And I'm like, that's because before all the one-liners, before this book was published or even thought about, and all these meetings, it was one alcoholic sharing his experience with another. You know? And sometimes that, I believe, is all we have. You know? And it's really important to, at least for me, considering how much of a selfish person I can be in sobriety, you know, and to stay on point with this path or whatever God is trying to tell me or show me, the more that I stay into action and try to transmit that hope and that love from my heart, the more things seem to be clearer to me in this so-called thing, you know, life. So I think that's really important, you know. And so getting to my story, how I got here, and, you know, I was born and raised in South Philadelphia. My dad wasn't around all the time. You know, I believe he's proven himself to me to be an alcoholic. Still doesn't believe it, but, you know, and then that was during his prime, and he was doing his thing. And so it was pretty much me, my sister, and my mom, third floor apartment in South Philly. And, you know, I always try to go back as far as I can because, you know, I hear people that talk about they feel that they were born an alcoholic, you know. I don't believe that was my experience, you know. I believe that somehow I was, like, naturally connected to this world, and it seemed like an awesome place, and, like, you know, I experienced curiosity and got in trouble and all the normal things a kid goes through, I think, you know. I think I was somewhat of a normal kid, and, you know. And also, you know, I live in South Philly now, and I have a son, and we, you know, I try to keep an open mind anytime I hear about people talking about God, and there's like these Bible thumpers that live on the corner from us, and this kid was like really persistent in wanting to hang out with us and try to, you know, enlighten us, I guess, you know, and I'm always, that's a good word, you know, I always like to be enlightened, you know, I'll give anybody any amount of time they need to try to share their experience with God with me. You know, I think it's an awesome thing. And he comes in the house and he was telling me how we're all born lost souls. And I said, do me a favor. Go upstairs, look in the crib, look in my son's eyes, and tell me if you see a lost soul. Because on some days, I wish I could ask my son to sponsor me. And he's not even three. He's so damn happy, you know. So I believe that was somewhat of my experience, you know. I believe that at some point, this world started to become darker and colder, you know. And I started to develop these ideas. And it didn't take too long, you know. I wasn't like, you know, this great kid and then, you know, went to college or anything. Like, you know, I started developing these ideas somewhere around 8 or 9. I started developing these ideas that, you know, I'm never, no matter how I try, even though I'm going to, I'm never going to measure up. You know, like just never going to measure up. And, you know, it started this anticipation inside of me and this fear and that, you know, that I had to try to get in where I fit in as much as I possibly could, no matter what it took, you know. And for me, the most simplest way was to be a class clown. I had my own personal desk in front of the principal's office. My teacher would ask me, Mr. Bearden, do you feel like learning today? And I would say no and go over to the principal's office where all the older guys was. Because, see, I just couldn't be amongst my peers. It was so uncomfortable, you know. I just couldn't. Like, I had to be somewhere else. You know, I had to be somebody else because I wanted to be what everybody else wanted me to be or what I thought you wanted me to be from that age, you know. And of course, now, see, I have this anticipation and this fear and this drive to just like, you know, constantly get in my own way. And it was like I became a prisoner of my own mind. And, you know, this world just kept getting darker and darker and colder and colder, you know, as a kid, you know, this little kid, man, scared to death. And so what happened was, you know, I feel I had my first spiritual experience. I had this amazing freedom. I was just before I turned 12. My father came back in the picture, and I'm from South Philly. My father, his side of the family are illegal entrepreneurs. You know, they drove Cadillacs, they wore suits, they demanded fear and respect out of people in the neighborhood, and that was attractive to me because it didn't seem like amongst my peers I was going to make it. So I had to find a way. You know, I had to find a way to make it, and it seemed like in my neighborhood it mattered how you held your hands and how you held your liquor. You know what I mean? Like, that's your reputation was everything in my neighborhood. You know what I mean? And that's what I tried to strive for because it wasn't going to happen in school, you know, amongst my peers. I had to find a way in. And, You know, so my father came back in the picture and he had this crazy lawsuit or whatever. So we finally got this house. And I was introduced to my first bedroom and they said, how do you like it? And it wasn't the fact that I was no longer sharing a room with my sister with bunk beds. It was I had my own room that had a window that led to a roof that led to an alley wall. That one night, if I get enough guts, I'm going to sneak out and seek some adventure. It took a week. I met up with this kid that was the new kid at school. He was in school and kids were picking on him. And at that time, I just started getting into boxing and stuff, you know what I mean? I started developing that reputation, and I was picking up for him. And I picked up for him immediately, and we connected immediately, because I felt like that new kid in school the entire time I'd been there, and it was 8 years, you know? And we connected, and he liked to get drunk, and we ended up, he called me up, and I said, sure, I'll come out. And I snuck out, I made my bed up with my clothes, and stuffed the football in the pillow, said, I want to do this, you know? So I went out, and we got drunk, and I was on my way back home, and there was a cop parked in the middle of the park, and I didn't want to get hit for curfew. So I had to make this right, like right in the middle of this huge crowd. Like at the time, they were like 16 to 27 years old, a full corner full of guys and girls. And everyone in the neighborhood knew of these people, you know what I mean? And like, you don't mess with them. And I'm like, damn, these guys are going to kick my ass if I walk through them, you know? But it's either get my ass kicked or go in front of the police, and I definitely would have to answer to my parents, you know? So I walk past them, and I'm like trying to cross the street from them, and they're yelling over me. I'm like, oh my God, these guys are going to kick my ass in front of this cop. This is crazy. These guys are nuts, you know. So I walk over anyway, and they're like, what are you doing around here? And I try to play it off like, oh, yo, you don't know me. I'm just hanging with my homie. Like at the time, I was a gangster, 12 years old, you know. Thought I was, well, I was an urban gangster, you know. They say, okay, why don't you sit here with us before you get killed around this neighborhood this time of night? It's like 2:30 in the morning. And right then and there, I felt like I made it, you know, for 5 minutes. I sat down next to these guys, and my head started saying, man, they can't honestly, like, really want me to hang out with them. Let me try to impress them. Let me try to do something. So I asked them if they like Heineken. They said, sure, you can't go wrong with Heineken. I said, all right. I ran back to my parents' house, snuck down the basement, grabbed a case of Heineken, started running down Momentum Avenue, 2:30 in the morning, 12 years old, with a case of Heineken, passed the cop and everything. I didn't even... And they were like, hell yeah, this is crazy. You know, they felt it was time for a celebration. We packed like 5 carloads in, and we went down to Franklin D. Roosevelt Park in South Philly. We call it down the lakes, and we broke into their pool. And here I am. I got like a 15-year-old girl on my shoulders playing chicken with these guys. I don't know about anybody else, but I think my drinking career was off to a pretty good start. And I had a spiritual experience that night, you know? Absolutely. You know? There was nothing on my shoulders anymore, you know, there was, besides a 15-year-old. Yeah. But, this is good. It seemed like if those guys did matter or if they cared about anything about me, it didn't matter to me, you know, and that was golden. You know, I matched that up. I realized that very quickly. It was just this intuition, you know. I didn't know exactly, like, what was happening and the cause of it, but I knew there was a freedom I experienced that night that I never experienced before, you know. And I wanted to experience that night every night of my life, you know. And I tried, you know. But the thing is, when I realized what makes me an alcoholic is that, you know, those nights that I couldn't sneak out, that my dad was on a rampage, and any minute he could just bust my door open and want to see me about something. And I could sneak downstairs and grab a few of his Heinekens and go up in the corner of my room, and things would be okay. You know? I did match that together. And how I believe that makes me an alcoholic is the difference between me and the average drinker or a temperate drinker or whatever they talk about exactly in the doctor's opinion is that most people drink for the effect. And I do. Like, I do, like, you know, my intentions are to get loose, you know. But I'm an alcoholic. Like, I drink until I'm face down on the floor, you know. But the thing is that a lot of people drink for that effect. And, you know, it's what alcohol does to them. You know, you drink enough, you get tipsy, you get loose. You drink more, you get drunk. You drink more, you get plastered, and then you're hungover and sick and all that stuff. The same physical attributes happens to me to everyone else on this planet. And that's what it does to me, and that's not the key here. You know? I drink alcohol, and I'm an alcoholic for what alcohol does for me. Because every one of you guys can be staring me right in the face, and life is showing up and kicking my ass, and within a couple seconds, I can drink all yous away like that. That is something that I must have. Because life is too much. You know? This head, this scared kid, this perception I have of this cold, cold, dark world. I need some kind of hope. I need some kind of strength. I need some kind of courage, which that's what alcohol does to me. It gives me those things. You know? No matter what is showing up in my life, it's going to be okay as long as I get this in my body. You know? All these things, it's like, okay, hold on, wait a second, let me put this in my body, and I'll take care of it all. And that never happens, you know? And especially like all the times I've been in rehab, and all the times I've tried to build up trust in my family and friends and all this stuff, and like, you know, I'm getting a little bit sober now, and, you know, people are looking up to me like, wow, we're really proud of him, this is awesome, like, you know, thank you, and we're proud of you, and for some reason or another, life starts showing up and kicking my ass. And I decide to drink again. And I can't put my finger on it. And I come home, and those people that were looking up to me, they're looking down at me asking me, how could you? And I don't have an answer. That right there anticipates some serious hopelessness for me. And I run, and I leave, and I don't see my folks for years at a time. You know? Because I just can't stand, you know, those emotions. Life showing up, kicking my ass. And I'm hopeless, and I'm shameful, and I'm guilty, and I just can't deal. I absolutely must have something in my system. What I didn't realize, there was another solution, you know. In coming to these meetings, I don't know why I didn't hear it, you know. I'm sure that it was said, you know. I don't, and by the way, I don't think anyone's killing anybody in AA either. Just want to get that by you. Some people, you know, sometimes all we have is our sobriety. I know that's a certainty as well. But here I'm going to these meetings, and you know, there's no solution except for me to do what I usually do. And I have plenty of experience on what not to do. What my experience was and what happened was that somebody who was active in AA reached his hand out to me, you know, because I've been to plenty of meetings where people say, which you hear it all the time, and it's perfectly fine, you know, keep coming back. It works. It does. Keep coming back. Like, we want to make you feel welcome. We want you here. We want to see you grow. We want to see a smile on your face. Like, I believe that. I understand the principles, and I understand what people mean. Nobody, like, you know, like, it takes courage to talk to another person. And if it's to say, keep coming back, cool. You know? That just wasn't enough for me at that time. And I would hear that, and I would say, shh, why should I come back? I'm dying inside. I'm sitting here. It freaking sucks. Every fiber in my body is telling me to run, scream, get out of here, of myself. I don't want to come back. You know what I mean? I need relief immediately. And the problem was, what happened was, that wasn't working anymore. It couldn't shut my head off. You know, here I am, I'm on Kensington Avenue in Philadelphia, and I'm sitting on a stoop with all this crap in my body. And I'm looking at the cars driving by with families in them, dying and wishing I could be a part of something like that. You know? Completely and utterly hopeless. It was no longer fun. There was no more escaping anything. You know? Here I am running from everything. I'm in a community that makes you feel comfortable being a junkie. I love Kensington. That's where I got sober. But that's where I ended up because it made me feel comfortable being who I was. But even that stopped working. Even my perception was so morbid and just down that I couldn't take it anymore. You know? So, through countless institutions, you know, I tried everything. I don't know about anybody else if you're familiar with this. And if, please, anyone who takes medication, if you need it, cool, you know. But I went to Friends Hospital in 1999, and that was somewhere around this bipolar epidemic. And I went there because I went to a recovery house, and again, you know, they're saying, kid, you feel like getting high or drinking, you give me a call. Unless I can sustain some type of connection with another man to have something in common, some kind of connection, I am not going to trust you. I am not going to talk to you. I am surely not going to call you on the phone. I'm going to go drink, you know, because I have no courage. My situation is so hopeless that if you have it going on, there is no way you would help a guy like me and waste your time. So I ended up picking up again in this recovery house, and I said, please. And of course, you know, I'm sitting at Fifth and Allegheny on the pavement with my head down, like, how did this happen again? I go back to the recovery house, and I say, hey, you know, I'm here. And they're like, dude. And I'm like, what? And they're like, you are a trigger to everyone in this house right now. And I'm like, triggers? And I was 18 years old at this time, and like, I knew nothing about the lingo or triggers or none of that. You know, I'm like, oh my God. And like, again, like, you know, I'm like shameful, guilty. And they just like took another shred of me by saying I'm a trigger. I'm like, what the hell is that? Oh my God, I'm really screwed, you know. So I said, look, I really need help. At the time, I was facing some serious time. It was in 1999. They passed the bill, the Commonwealth states, 3 strikes, you're out for violent crimes, 25 to life. I had 3 first-degree burglaries. And the public pretender said, listen. Because, of course, I was out on my own. I'm a man. You know, I don't need my family, anything like that. So, you know, I got the PD in front of me. And he's like, listen, man, don't worry about that, you know, 25 to life thing. I think we can get you a deal. And I said, what's that? He's like, 15 to 30. So my gangster butt starts bawling and calling mom. Please help. So, and that's how I ended up at Fresh Start. I went to Eagleville. I stayed there 2 weeks. And again, left to my own devices, my head that's spinning out of control, and this emptiness inside that I can like feel nothing. Like it's like butterflies in my stomach constantly. 2 weeks in Eagleville, I left AMA. You know? People talk about they lose things in sobriety. I was willing to trade. I knew circumstances. I knew consequences very well. And I took a chance every time. It was worth it to me. Whether it was my family, whether it was trust, whether it was time, my freedom, whatever. It didn't matter. So here I am standing in front of these guys, and I'm a trigger. And I said, I really need help. You know, I have tears in my eyes. Like, how has this happened to me? I really want to do well. You know, again, I want to be what everybody wants me to be. You know, I just can't, like how it talks about, we have moral, philosophical convictions galore. I did. You know, I wanted to be all those things, you know. I couldn't live up to it, even though I wanted to. I was dying to. And they said, well, kid, you need to go to friends and tell them you're going to kill yourself. And I'm 18 years old, first time in recovery. I'm like, this is crazy. They're like, just go in there, act like you're crazy, it'll be fine. And I'm like, holy shit. So I walk in there, twitching, was like shaking and twitching, and I'm like, you know, trying to tell them I'm crazy and stuff. I got a knife around the corner, I want to kill myself or somebody. And this doctor has got this clipboard. He's looking at me, shaking his head, probably saying, "Look, kid, we'll help you. You can stay. Just stop twitching. It's all right." So I get in the circle of these doctors, and they're all asking me these questions. And they're asking me, like, do I get real depressed? And I'm like, depressed? Are you kidding? Look at me, man. You know? And they're like, "Oh, well, do you ever want to exert yourself and really help people and all this stuff?" And I'm like, "Sure." And I'm thinking, when I'm stoned, yeah, you know? And they're like, "We got it." And I'm like, "Oh, wait, is it, what do you got?" And they're like, "Did you ever hear of bipolar disorder?" And I'm like, "No, what's that?" And they're like, "Well, there's it's bracketed with this disorder that you're a manic depressive type that suffers from severe depression in a manic state, and it's a mental illness." And I'm like, holding my head in my hands, it was very bittersweet. One, I'm screwed for the rest of my life, bitter, you know. And sweet, finally there's a name for the issue that I have. Like, oh, I'm just mentally retarded. This is why I've been acting this way. Cool, okay. And so I'm sitting there all depressed, and they're like, "Anthony, it's okay, we'll help you." And I'm like, "Yeah, right, like, I'm screwed the rest of my life." And they're like, "We're going to give you some medication." And a light bell went on. I was like, "Wow, medication, that's funny. I was just going to ask you guys for some medication. I can't believe I've been walking around all this time not medicated. Please help me." "Sure, sure, sure." So I complied with all their treatment, you know, became president of the group. I do that, you know, because there's those moral and philosophical convictions, you know. I want to be what everybody wants me to be. I want everybody to see that I'm doing well. I want to help you. You know what I mean? I do. Because I don't want to look at myself. I can't stand to look at myself for a second. So I'll focus on you. I'll focus on the whole group, and I will run everything. You know, that's what I want to do. And I succeed. Every rehab I've been in, which I fail miserably right afterwards, and when they buzz the doors open to release me from these places, I'm always voted most likely to succeed. You know? "Wow, that kid's got heart. He's got passion. He's going to do well." You know, but I'm dying inside, you know? And so what happens is, you know, I take all these ideas that I have about myself and what these people have diagnosed me with and what people have told me where I'm going to end up and like all these things. I take all these ideas and I finally get done with them. You know, I had nowhere else to turn but to go to God. And it was a magical time because I ended up in a place where there was nothing but God and a spiritual buzz around this room that was just unshakable. It was the last stop, 2004. And, I met a guy there that night, and it changed me because I was still stoned. And I walked in there, and Eddie Z let me stay. And I came in with a female only because, again, you know, I'll focus on you. I'll help this girl because my situation is so hopeless. I want to help her. She can come in, meet up with some women, and as soon as she starts getting this thing, I can roll because, you know, I'm done. Excuse me. And, the first night I was there, this man spoke to me till like 4 o'clock in the morning. And he was trying to describe a hole in the soul. And I didn't get it. You know, I'm like, a hole in my... There's a hole here somewhere. You know what I mean? It was just like, I didn't get it, you know. But I remember that he spent all that time talking with me. And then the next couple of days, I started hearing things that were different. And I remember telling this girl that maybe we could fight this thing together. You know, things are different. The next day, I found out she slept with this other dude at the clubhouse. And I was convinced that God has cursed me and that it's my time to go once again. And I go to walk outside, and there's this guy out there who ended up being my sponsor who told me, "Anthony, you need to get in this car. We're going to a meeting." And the car's right across the street. And I'm like, "You're out of your mind. I'm not going to a meeting. I need a cigarette, and I'm out of here." And he says, "No, you need to get in the car." And I'm like, "Where are we going?" He said, "Harbor City, Baltimore, Maryland." And I'm like, "We're in Philadelphia." At a clubhouse that there's still 2 more meetings tonight here. Why are we going all the way out there? "Anthony, don't worry about it." I was like, Give me a cigarette. So the dude gives me a cigarette. He's already with me. And he points to the car, and it's this brand new Mustang. So I'm thinking, you know what? These guys are from Springfield. I could probably, you know, hustle some cash out of them. You know what? Before I just run, let me think about this and come up with a plan so I can get, you know, what I want at the end of this trip, you know? So I hop in the Mustang. I'm in the back of these bucket seats, and two dudes are like this. And I'm detoxing, by the way. I'm like my third day in. Oh, lovely experience. And I'm sitting there, and we start heading on 95 South. And the crazy thing about this story is, for years, it was my six-year anniversary, and Eddie Z, who was running the Last Stop, he owns the building. He heard me speak my six-year anniversary when I talked about this story, and I always wondered why that man was arguing with me and forcing me to go in this car, because there's been plenty of times I show up at the Last Stop to go on a road trip, and if you don't want to go, there's a few more guys that's willing to go. So why me? And Eddie Z heard me speak that, and he came to me after the meeting, and he says, I know why. And I said, why? He goes, I've seen what you were going through, and I told him, no one's going unless Anthony goes with you. And that night changed my life. I hopped in the car, and we hit on 95 South. I asked the driver for a light, and he looks at me, and he's like, there's no smoking in this car, dude. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is going to suck. So I get in the car, you know, we're in the car, and then he go to pop in a CD. And I'm like, so maybe they got good music, you know? So who's that? And they're like, it's Tom Flynn. And I'm like, who's he, a country singer? And they're like, no, it's the speaker we're going to hear tonight. And I'm like, wait a second. We're driving 2.5 hours to a meeting to hear a guy that you have a CD of in your car right now. Yeah, I'm going to sleep, okay? So I ended up going to sleep. Went to sleep, and I woke up to what I considered for a long time my mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was like 300 people that night. Tom Flynn was sharing, celebrating 24 years that night. And it was the first meeting that I experienced hope. It was when there was undenying the feeling that I got in the room. You know, he said something that I always talk about and always will to the day that I die about the first step. He said, it should be easy to surrender when there's nothing left to defend. And I had nothing on the inside left. What is there left? Nothing. He said that there was a victory over alcoholism in late 1934 when one alcoholic sat down to share his experience with another. Then the miracle happened in 1939 when this book was published and shared with the world. He said, the war is over, guys. All you have to do is come with us. Stay 3 feet behind. And I felt at home. First time, like, I actually felt a part of something. Like, here goes this man who obviously is some type of big deal. And it seemed like he was speaking just to me. You know what I mean? That I was a part of, that I was welcome. And those guys made it very clear to me that I was welcome to be with them. Of course, there was an unwritten contract for me to do the same thing as someone else when I had the opportunity to do so. And that floored me. It's the first time in my life that I experienced that altruism. You know what I mean? I felt it. It wasn't like, oh, here goes Joe Program just trying to play a good game or anything like that. No. This was 1 o'clock in the morning, still driving back to Philadelphia, that they were trying to get someone new to experience a message of hope. And they weren't letting me go. He said, Anthony, we can help you. And it's so important, man, to make people feel welcome. You know, I lose sight of it sometimes. I don't know how many cups of coffee I bought for people. I don't know how many times I've, you know, paid for dinner at diners. But I remember that night when they did that for me. And I said, as soon as I start working, I want to pay you guys off. Because we were at a rest stop. It was like $20 for like burger and fries or something like that. It was something ridiculous. And they said, no, we want you to pay us back, but you pay it to the next guy who doesn't have it when you have it. And it hit me, man. Like, I think we might miss that sometimes. Or I know I do. You know what I mean? And it doesn't mean anything. It's like, oh, no, it's nothing here. Dinner on me or whatever. But, like, it meant so much to me that I knew that these people were concerned about my well-being and didn't want anything in return. You know? Again, that unity, service, and recovery. So important, you know? If we could just put our shit, or at least if I could just put my shit aside and all my problems and all these, you know, ideas of the day or whatever, you know, and focus on the next person, you know, I can, you know, I know God will make me realize what my purpose is, you know? And sometimes I think it's just being one of His kids and run around His playground, you know, and trying to get to know all of them, you know? And there's an amazing freedom that comes with that, you know? And I had that freedom. I had that freedom for a while. I took advantage of it. I ran with it for a good three and a half years. I was consistently sponsoring, consistently road tripping, consistently everything you could think of in AA without any responsibility but to pay my rent and to go to work and do AA. And I was having a time of my life. So if anyone ever talks about a pink cloud that it's going to burst someday or whatever like that, I would never say that to anybody. You know? If you are experiencing that fire and you have that hope in your heart, run with it, you know, and don't let anybody tell you that it's not real, you know, because there is going to be some time when you're faced with life and it's not going to be fun, you know, but I believe that if we run with those feelings and that fire for as long as we can, it'll prepare us for when life shows up and it's not fun. You know, my sponsor told me, Anthony, follow your heart, not your head. He talks about the road less traveled. It's 18 inches long from my head to my heart, you know. And he said, no matter what anybody tells you, because you're going to hear shit from people in AA that you're too new, you don't know enough and all this stuff. But if you have experience that you can recap for 5 minutes. You have that 5 minutes to share some hope to somebody else. And he told me that I had 4 days sober. And 4 days, we came back to that meeting. It was the following day. We were sitting down. I was reading the third step prayer. And he said, please read this until you mean it. And I remember, it's so funny how it says the wording was optional, of course, after the prayer, because I just read the top half of the prayer. I said, God, I offer myself to Thee because I'm a piece of shit and I just don't know. And if you're out there, please just show me. That's all I said. You know? And I said it over and over again. And I kind of pictured myself like having these gloves and like throwing them off when Tom Flynn said it's to be easy to surrender when there's nothing left to defend. I had that in my head and I was like, I'm not fighting anymore. I'm following these guys. If I had to tie my shoes the way these guys are tying their shoes, I'm willing to do that. Because I had tears in my eyes because how happy they were and how I was dying to feel that they were what they were feeling. You know, dying to feel that way. And they said it was available and I could feel that way. Don't use your head. You know, in fact, they would say, Anthony, use your head for entertainment purposes only. You know? When you start thinking, start laughing and call someone because it's a freaking joke. And guess what? That applies to today. That applies today as well. I come up with some great ideas sometimes, boy. So that's what happened, you know. They made an impact on my life, these guys, by making things simple and just sharing with me that language of the heart. You know, at all costs. Like, they were willing to show me love so I can show it to somebody else. You know, that's what they were showing me. Everything that they did, they made an example out of it that I can do it for somebody else. No matter what anyone says, whatever my head tells me, you know. And that fourth day when I'm sitting there, he said, Anthony, regardless of whatever your head tells you, you have something to offer everyone in this clubhouse. And I mentioned a little bit of this in the beginning. And I said, number one, your experience on how it doesn't work. You know, someone might not have gone through what you've gone through and you can pull them back. You know, two is your experience so far. It's like, what have you experienced, you know? That meeting, did you experience some hope? Yeah. Can you remember anything what Tom Flynn said? Yeah, one thing, you know. He said, you know, the doctor's opinion, the history of AA, like the things that we've discussed. If you can recap 5 minutes of that, you have that to share. And he said, number three, your most important thing you have to offer is your friendship. And he pointed to a guy that was down the street for like 8 years. And nobody was talking to him. And he gave me a cigarette. And he asked me to get this guy a cup of coffee. And he said, Anthony, see if this guy's willing to listen to that 5 minutes. It might make him feel human again. 4 days sober, guys. I had tears coming down my eyes. Wow, this man is telling me that I have something to offer somebody else. And it felt right. God was talking to me. I had no idea. You know, I see it now. You know, so that's what happened. We went through the steps. I had some amazing experiences, you know. Just the idea of me actually going through the steps and experiencing these things was just phenomenal, you know. I couldn't believe it. After all these years of in and out and actually experiencing these things, you know. And like he's like, yeah, you can share this with somebody else. Unbelievable, you know. And another part of that unity thing, which is really helpful to me as far as my first real amends experience, it happened at the clubhouse. And, you know, I think across the board it can help anybody, this change of perception due to the circumstances at the last stop this day, that I got really sick and I got dropped off from work because I couldn't even work. And I was laying on the bench and this guy who was running the clubhouse, he was out of his mind. He had 2.5 years sober. I had 2.5 months sober. He said, you need to get off the bench. You're not laying on the bench. I said, well, I'm really sick. I'm willing to go out in the backyard. Can you just open the door? And he said, no, I'm not opening the door. You need to sit up. And I was like, well, then you need to make me get the F off this bench. So he called the cops. And I called him a few names and I walked outside and he felt that it was necessary to try to remove me from the last stop property. So he like grabbed my arms and shoved me off of the curb. And there was a couple guys outside and they were all like hooting and hollering. And, you know, a couple of the guys knew me from the neighborhood. So here I am. I take my shirt off. I got my hands up and I'm like, that's the last stop property. This is the street. Come here. And I went to point in his face, and like he like flinched, and I'm like, oh my God. And I look to my right, here comes my sponsor. Now, at this time, I got like veins popping out of my neck, and I yell at my sponsor saying, you call this practicing principles? The guy's got 2.5 years. And he's like, what happened? And like, you know, we were still about to fight, and I mean, he was just standing there, and this guy pulled me across the street, and I sat down. And at the time, I was fighting a case, and you know, all this insanity, and I went down the front street, I sat on the step, and I said the resentment prayer. And I'm sitting down there, and I just had, like, you know, I didn't want to lose what I had. You know, I didn't want to hurt anybody. I didn't want to do that, but, like, you know, that's what I was always taught. Like, you know, it, when someone threatens you, you put your hands up, you take care of that, you know? That's just how it is, and it didn't feel right. And then I seen a paddy wagon show up, Philadelphia police, and then they leave. Now, if I were to hit this guy with my record, it would have been 4 to 8 years, definitely. You know, I have 17 arrests, 6 convictions, and by the time I was 23. And I walked back, and my sponsor standing up against the pole with a smirk on his face, and he's like, what happened? And I told him, and he was like, okay, well, you know what you have to do, right? And I'm like, no, don't tell me I have to make amends to this guy. And he's like, all right, Anthony, this is the first and last time I'm probably ever going to say this to you for the rest of your life. And I said, what? He's like, I think he's an asshole and he's probably wrong. And you're probably right. But do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? So I want to be happy. He goes, then you need to do this. He's like, you called the man a whatever. I call him a bunch of names, you know. And I'm like, are you cheap? Not willing at all. I mean, I was willing, but I had no desire to be friendly to this man. Like, I'm like, I can't believe, you know, all this stuff. And, of course, you know, what was affected? You know, my pride, my ego, you know. I have fear of what people think of me. Oh, my God, what are you going to think? I didn't crack this guy, you know, all this stuff. Like, oh, man, like, I need to have these people in Kensington know who I am. Yeah, right. So I walk and I'm praying, and he always said, if I'm willing and I pray, that God will provide the words. And I didn't believe that at all. I'm like, okay, yes, sir. God's going to just like portal these this terminology right through my lungs, right? Sure. So I walk past, everybody, and I go in the back of the last stop, and it seemed that things became sincere when I was right in front of this man with my hand out to him. And I said, you know, to the gentleman that I don't care who's right or who's wrong. You know, I don't want to be the man that I used to be. And if you want to talk about this situation or any situation in the future, I want you to know I want to be your friend. At the time, I was like this idiotic gangster with like Ebonics as my vocabulary. Words like that have never come out of my mouth. God showed up. And I walked away free. And two guys that knew me from the neighborhood, they asked me to help them. They said, I don't know if I want to be that well, Anthony, but something just happened. Could you help us, you know? And it was amazing. I said, wow, God showed up, you know? There was a certainty in my heart. I knew that I never would have came up with you know, those sentences, you know? Amazing. And there's many different experiences I've had where, you know, God has intervened and I just see it. There was no doubt, you know, like, wow, you know, God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. As a result of these steps, as the result of that altruism, as a result of being in service and showing love at all costs, putting my stuff aside and sacrificing what, you know, my ideas or what I think that people would have me be. Amazing. And considering certainty in my heart, what it's like today is it's just an absolute privilege to have God in my life, the friends that I have in my life, and this solution, and being a part of it, and being connected to it. Because, guys, life has shown up and kicked the shit out of me within this last month. And I think it is so important, and I tell everyone, you have that fire, you get up here, and you talk about all the hope you want, man, and light the room up. You know? I can believe that you haven't had one single bad day in sobriety if you tell me. I want to believe that. But I'm not here to tell you guys that tonight. You know, I've had amazing experiences, and my experiences through this entire situation I've been through in the last month, there's still a certainty in my heart that God is real, and that it is an honor to be a part of this program, this fellowship, you know. But like I said, I have a son, and I had a fiance, and we had like this beautiful life together and very successful. We were like the AA dream team. You know, and we had friends that said, you know, I want my life to look like yours. And that is no longer right now, you know. And again, I have to have that certainty in my heart that God is trying to show me something and tell me something that is beyond my ideas of what my life should look like. Tough. This has actually been the most like excruciating fetal position pain I've ever been in my life. Not being with my son. But I had to look at what God has given me. You know what I mean? Like whether God took this person from me or took my son temporarily from me or whatever. You know, God's the same person that put them in my life in the first place. How about that? I think we have no more excuses, guys. Like, we have to be part of the sunlight of the Spirit so we can keep other people, you know, like, certain that this thing works. You know, drink is not an option. It just isn't, you know. I mean, of course it can happen, and that, you know, like, I understand that. I'm not immune, you know? But if I stay plugged in and I stay, you know, with one hand in God's hand and one hand in one of His kids' hands, you know, my purpose will remain clear. I believe that. And that's what I'm trying to do today. You know, the success, all the experiences, all that stuff, like, you know, what matters the most is what's in my heart and what I have to offer. And it has to be love. It can't be resentful at my life and my situation or resentful at anybody. Because when I am, I'm no use to anybody. You know? And the purpose of me sharing this with you guys is that life can show up and kick the crap out of you, but it doesn't have to level you like it used to level me and I just go run and drink. It doesn't have to be that way. You know? I can still smile like when it seems dark and cold. You know, I can call up a friend. You know, I can go to a meeting and see someone to help. Or I can see someone that has had this experience and can help me. You know, because I need help too. You know, that sobriety date, it just shows I have quite a bit of life experience. And like, you know, I've been consistently sponsoring people all that time. So it's been such a joy to be in this fellowship when I have been, you know, but it's just a date. You know, this stuff applies to me today, and it will always apply to me equally from the first day I walked in, that I must try to practice these principles in all my affairs, you know, to the best of my ability, and it takes a lot of effort. You know, they say this is a simple program. It is, but it's not easy. Anyone that says easy does it, excuse me, but, you know, easy doesn't do shit. You know, I understand why people say it, you know, but the definition of easy is effortless. With everything I've been through and how I'm here tonight, it took some serious work. A lot of on my knees and a lot of talking, you know, with you guys, you know, but it takes consistency in that action to be free from all the stuff that, you know, all the things that I put in my way, you know, my way between me and God, you know. So, but it is simple, and the definition of simple is just something, you know, uncomplicated and direct, you know. But if anything, if you aren't experienced in that, and you're not, and you have something wrong with you, you can't put your finger on whether you're sober or not, ask somebody. Like, if someone around you is happy and you'll know that they're doing this deal, you ask them, how the hell did you do it? If that person already isn't asking you if they can help you, you know? And I know it's hard because it was difficult for me. I never asked a man for help until I came through this process. But initially, I couldn't ask that man to sponsor me. I never asked my first sponsor to sponsor me. He took me through the steps. Thank God, because I didn't have the courage, you know? But, like, again, if anything, you know, just know that we're all miracles. You know what I mean? That we're here. Like, we have a purpose, man. You know, like, look at the people around you and just think, like, man, like, how can I be a friend? It's so important. Because you never know whether that person is within their last 30 days or not. You can help, you know? And it is an absolute honor to be a part of anything in AA. You know, and I greatly appreciate Dave coming and asking me to speak. And that's all I have. Thanks.